Have any apologies?
West Coast and Manga Ung.
Oh, who? We have an apology, a written apology there from Dikhale. The other members will be absent. We've not heard from him. No, he was here last week. Yeah. Not as far as I know. The last matter before us then is the minutes of our previous meeting. I have looked at the minutes of the meeting. It basically has the attendance register, which we agreed to, a very synoptical summary of the presentation that was done by DTI, and then the conversation or recommendations, the discussion that we've had as members. And it's only 2.5 pages. It has been distributed to all of us. No, is it a quorum or is it a matter of the number of members for the minutes? It's provinces, my colleague. Okay. We'll have to deal with it at another time. Yeah, the matter that is before us. Okay, I'll deal with that now. Are we ready then to go into the presentation by Dirko on our ratification of the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons, we do have our colleagues from DIRCO here to do the presentation to us. Procedurally, members, in order for us to accede to the request to ratify. We need to be five provinces. We are hoping that Free State will join us before the end of our proceedings. The Comrade Parties is in another meeting at the moment and requested that we proceed, and he will join us at later on in the meeting. We want to welcome you from Durban. We prefer that when departments do presentations to us, you have a political head with you, either the deputy minister or the minister. Durko has two deputy ministers. I do not have before us any letters of apology for either the deputy ministers or the minister, in which case they will be recorded in our minutes as being absent from this meeting. Ordinarily, the Honourable Deputy Minister Landers would communicate with me if he's unable to make it. Do you have any if you have anything to say in that regard, please, prior to your starting with your presentation, you are also allowed to speak to us on that. We give over to you. The presentation is very brief. We're not asking you to spend too much time. It's 12 pages. We have another meeting following this one, so you are not saving us time, or you don't have to go out to without taking away from the essence of it. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. I was trying to check my colleague from the Ministry if she has any information about either Deputy Minister Landers or Mahaule or something. Yeah, there was no apology tendered to the Chair. So, I don't know. Do you
have Minister and Deputy Minister Landers is traveling at the moment, and I think DM Mahaule is attending Cabinet Committee meeting at the moment. Other than that, I haven't received communication.
Thanks very much. It is noted, but it is preferred in this meeting. They will be marked absent, although you're sharing that with us, because we have a procedure that you, if we don't have anything in writing, it does not count. Thank you very much.
Honourable Chair, thank you very much. My name is Doug Mashabane. I'm the head of the business unit responsible for UN political affairs as well as international peace and security. And I'm assisted here by Mr. Fulufelo Temeli. So we're here before this esteemed committee, Honourable Chair, to make a presentation on the treaty prohibiting nuclear weapons. Like you said, we're mindful of your busy schedule, so it's not our intention to take much of the time, except that as a way of background, which I think is very important, we'll just spend some time just giving a bit of a historic background that will sort of lay the context as to why we are here. As many of you might be aware, nuclear weapons in the form of a hydrogen bomb were first used in the Second World War when the United States of America dropped the bomb in Hiroshima and Nagasaki in 1945, which of course scholars are divided on whether the dropping of the bombs is what led to the end of the Second World War. New records have emerged that show that the Japanese cabinet had met and had agreed that they were going to enter into a peace agreement and not continue to prosecute the war. Now, after that discovery, the people who were behind the scientific experimentation and the discovery of the atomic bomb started proliferating that experience, that technological skills and know-how. And other countries, 1949, the Russians acquired the technology and they developed the bomb. And the Brits followed, the French followed, and the Chinese followed. And that, of course, then worried the Americans that there was this proliferation of what today we call nuclear weapons. And for that reason, then, they started raising issues about this possible proliferation that basically everybody in the world will end up having nuclear weapons. And there was now an experience of what an atomic bomb can do based on the Nagasaki and the Hiroshima experience. And of course, after the UN was formed in 1945, the General Assembly, being the main principal organ of the UN, which is responsible for policy matters, the first resolution that the General Assembly entertained was on disarmament. And because of, obviously, the experience of the Second World War. Now, the Americans realized that there was going to be a problem, and they made a proposal based on a program that was proposed called Atoms for Peace. Because, you know, with atoms, you can have atoms, you know, once you enrich uranium, you can produce the so-called weapon-grade uranium. And also you then have, you know, technology that you use nuclear for peaceful purposes or for what we call civilian purposes. Then the Americans proposed a discussion which led to a treaty that was adopted called the Non-Proliferation Treaty. And the Non-Proliferation Treaty came into force in 1970. And it was valid for 25 years. So it was due for a review in 1995. And of course, many of you will know that the late Foreign Minister Nzo led the South African delegation to that conference that looked at a possible review or termination of that treaty. The South African position at the time was that the treaty was very important. It needed to be extended indefinitely. Now, just a few things I must say about that treaty called the Non-Proliferation Treaty, which South Africa acceded to after the dismantlement in the early 90s of South Africa's nuclear weapon program. The treaty, in fact, created three pillars. One pillar deals with nuclear disarmament, meaning that the states that had nuclear weapons in 1970 were supposed to dismantle those nuclear weapons over a period of time. The weakness in that treaty is that it doesn't set timeline, it just say, you know, this will be done. The second pillar then deals with the peaceful uses of nuclear. As you know, we currently produce in South Africa through the nuclear peaceful program that we have isotopes that are used for the treatment of cancer. So the treaty deals with that part that states will have what we call inalienable rights to peaceful uses of nuclear. And the third pillar, of course, talks about non-proliferation, meaning that you have to manage the nuclear materials that could be used for wrong reasons. Now, the problem with it is that the treaty prohibits states from developing nuclear weapons, but at the same time recognizes those who already had the weapons to continue possessing the weapons with the hope that someday they will dismantle those weapons. And then the five states that are called nuclear weapon states happens to be the US, the UK, France, Russia, and China. Now, they are not the only states who have nuclear weapons. We currently in the world have about 18,000 nuclear warheads. And of that, the majority is shared between Russia and the US. The Chinese warheads are around 200, the French they have around 300, and the Brits have around 150. So then the majority of that 18,000, which is between 7.5 of the US and about 8,000 of the Russian Federation. Now, you have other states, India, Pakistan, the Democratic People's Republic of Korea and Israel, who have nuclear weapons as well. But they are not called nuclear weapon states, they are called nuclear possessors, because in terms of that treaty, they are not supposed to have the nuclear weapons. Now, they have not signed the treaty. So over time, the NPT, the Non-Proliferation Treaty, has to be reviewed every 5 years. That's what was agreed in 1995. Now, when we do the review, we have to review the three pillars. So a concern has arisen amongst many of us, South Africa being part of it, that the main focus has changed. The nuclear weapon states are no longer disarming. They are no longer destroying their nuclear weapons. They are not dismantling, in fact. What they are focusing on is, in fact, tightening our access to technology for peaceful purposes. And, of course, over time, a movement arose which started highlighting the humanitarian consequences of a possible detonation of a nuclear weapon. As you know, and as well, this state spends a lot of money. 3 years ago, you'll recall that the United Kingdom announced a sum of about 40 billion pounds to sort of modernize their nuclear weapons. So the concern has been that the amount of money that is spent, not only on arms in general, but basically and specifically on nuclear weapons, it's money that could be utilized for sustainable development, to assist countries, developing countries, and least developed poor countries. But then the issue as well, there's been a standoff between the NATO and Russia, the US and Russia, that has been very concerning because states keep nuclear weapons in their strategic military doctrines, meaning that they can deploy. Most of the nuclear warheads are ready for deployment within a very short space of time. So there's been a concern that even an accidental detonation can lead to a nuclear war or, you know, damage that cannot be explained. So the movement started raising this concern, and in fact, as opposed to in the past where we used to think that if nuclear weapons were to be used somewhere else, we would be safe, or in Africa or far away. Scientists have now proven that even if nuclear weapons are used somewhere, there's the so-called long winter that will ultimately affect us here in Africa. And there's been the so-called modernization and miniaturization of these warheads. Back in the Cold War days, there were a number of warheads that were there were above 50,000. And that's an argument now that 18,000 is far lower than that. But they've been modernized, so they are no longer as big as they used to be. And there's been a modernization of the manner in which they can be delivered through ballistic missiles, intercontinental ballistic missiles, as well as cruise missiles. So the humanitarian impact movement then started raising the issue of the need to have a treaty basically that will ban production, possession, and deployment of nuclear weapons. So South Africa, together with other states like Austria, Brazil, New Zealand, and Ireland, led the call for the negotiations. We went to the UN General Assembly, and the UN General Assembly agreed that the diplomatic conference should be convened last year in July to negotiate the treaty. So the negotiations happened, and the General Assembly convened again and adopted the treaty. Of course, nuclear weapon states, which happen to be the five who are also serving as permanent members of the Security Council, boycotted the conference. Now, so the treaty was adopted by an overwhelming majority of the members of the General Assembly of the UN, and it was signed by 69. It was opened for signature last year in September, and South Africa signed as part of that 69. Now, the African continent delivered the largest number of votes for the treaty to be adopted. So far, the treaty has been ratified by 19 states, and 50 states are required for the treaty to come into force. The Gambia became the first African state to ratify the treaty this previous September at the UN. Now, there's an expectation, of course, that South Africa, having been at the forefront of the negotiation of this treaty, has to ratify. So if that's the reason why, then we come here. Mm-hmm. We have sought legal opinion from the Department of Justice, as well as the state law advisors in the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, and indeed it was confirmed that there's nothing in the treaty that militates against our constitution or any policy for that matter. As you will know, honorable members, South Africa is already a state party to the Pelindaba Treaty. This is a treaty that creates a nuclear weapon-free zone in the continent. And that treaty has been ratified by 40 states. Now, there are states that will not be able to ratify, particularly Egypt, because as you will know, that's the Pelindaba Treaty. Egypt, part of Egypt is in the Middle East. Now there's an issue with the Middle East. The Middle East is one of the few places in the world that do not have a zone that is declared free of nuclear weapons for obvious reasons. The Iran question in relation to their nuclear program, but mainly because Israel is a nuclear weapon state, I mean, it's a nuclear weapon possessor state. Now, there's been a call for a conference since 1995 to have a discussion of a possibility to have a treaty that will declare the Middle East a zone free of nuclear weapons and other weapons of mass destruction. And that conference can't take place because the Israelis insist that before that conference can take place, there must be a conference to discuss strategic security environment in that region. So it's for that reason that the Treaty of Pelindaba, which, by the way, we are hosting the Secretariat, and we were elected in May as a country to chair the African Commission on Nuclear Energy, which is created by the Pelindaba Treaty. So, and we are also, we have signed and ratified the other treaty dealing with the Comprehensive Nuclear Weapons Test Ban Treaty, which has a secretariat in Vienna. So for that reason, when you look at the current treaty, there's nothing new. As you will see, of course, from the preamble, it makes reference to the treaties that I've already spoken to, the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, the Comprehensive Nuclear Weapons Test Ban Treaty, as well as the advisory opinion of the International Court of Justice. And the first article, of course, because this is a treaty prohibiting nuclear weapons, deals with prohibition. So it mainly mentions the fact that the development, the testing, the production, the manufacturing, the acquisition, the possession, stockpile of nuclear weapons or nuclear explosive devices are prohibited. And then, of course, you have the declarations which relate to countries who have nuclear weapons who decide to sign up into the country that they have to declare all their stockpiles. And further, the treaty, of course, we look at institutional arrangement. What has been agreed, of course, is that the treaty will come into force 90 days after the deposit of the 50th instrument of ratification, which we hope that if this esteemed committee recommends and Parliament agrees that we will become the 20th state to ratify.
Sorry, let me interrupt you. I thought you were just going to be brief on that first part. No, but you've given us a document, and we're trying to follow you on the document.
Well, I thought this would make it to be the shortest presentation. I'm fine, I get it.
No. I'm not saying that you mustn't be short. I'm just saying that you mentioning things is very important. Mm-hmm. And if you can just point us where it is in the document, then it makes it easier for us. Because we have to make a decision based on information that is before us. Thank you.
Page one is mainly the background. Page one was the background. Page two deals with the preamble of the treaty. So the preamble of the treaty expresses the moral and the political intention of the treaty, which is mainly to stigmatize and delegitimize nuclear weapons. If I was to explain that, the reason being that nuclear weapons are the only weapons of mass destruction that were not under a treaty until this treaty was negotiated. Chemical weapons, biological weapons, and the other weapons, even conventional weapons, they are all governed by a treaty. So, but nuclear weapons per se and their banning were never under a treaty. So this is what in terms of the preamble this seeks to do. And the preamble, as you'll see in bullet two as well, talks about the disproportionate resources allocated towards the retention and the modernization of the weapons. And the last point in that page two, which is very important, bullet point three, which the preamble reaffirms that in the treaty nothing shall be interpreted as affecting the inalienable rights of states to develop.
No, you've lost us. My page two has the purpose.
Okay, so I will not mention the page because they are all the screen is page 6 for the page.
Can you keep it up for us?
But it was on just now.
No, I think it's...
Oh, there you have the thing. Because we all have that hard copy.
Yes, okay, I apologize.
Please.
I apologize. So on page 6 again, then the preamble focuses on the humanitarian impact of the risk. That if you were to have nuclear weapons detonated, the impact it will have on the environment, on the global economy, health, women and girls, indigenous peoples, and obviously then it will violate international humanitarian law. And of course, it makes reference to the first resolution in 1946 of the UN, which spoke about the need to negotiate, disarmament, particularly nuclear weapons disarmament, and the peaceful uses of nuclear energy. And I've explained, of course, what the program we have in South Africa, the Safari reactor that we have in Pelindaba, as well as the production of nuclear isotopes. Before the temporary closure, we were part of the largest, or at some point we were number one highest producer of medical isotopes in the world. So page 7, which deals with prohibitions, the treaty there specifically then prohibits the development, the testing, the production, manufacturing, acquisition, possession, stockpile, transfer or receive transfer, use or threat to use as, of nuclear weapons. And also, the point we're making that the prohibitions are consistent with the treaty that we currently are executing, which is the Comprehensive Nuclear Weapons Test Ban Treaty, the Pelindaba Treaty, as well as complement the Non-Proliferation Treaty. In page 8, the treaty is a part that deals with declaration, safeguards, and elimination, that those countries that currently have nuclear weapons, if they join the treaty, there are specific declarations that they will have to make, which is disclosing the number of nuclear warheads that they have, as well as their possible stationing. You will know the U.S. has nuclear weapons and warheads stationed in Europe as part of NATO, which is what created a problem between them and Russia. And the Russians as well have deployed and stationed in the eastern part of Europe with possible targets of mainland Europe. And of course then, in terms of the declarations, the commitment to irreversibly eliminate or remove nuclear weapons, in a specific time frame that has to be agreed with the state parties. Then on page 9 is the institutional arrangement, which deals with currently, like I said, we have 69 states that have signed and 19 have ratified. 50 states are required to ratify for the treaty to come into force. And once the treaty comes into force, which is 90 days after the ratification of the deposition of the 50th instrument of ratification, then the conference of the state parties will immediately meet, and there will be review conferences every 6 years. Now, in terms of this treaty, no reservation is allowed, because specifically this is a normative treaty. Now, the withdrawal, which is the last bullet, is what we currently have in the Non-Proliferation Treaty. So the DPRK, which is the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, North Korea, used to be a state party to the NPT, but they withdrew some years ago, citing the reasons that there were extraordinary events that have jeopardized the supreme interest of states. And of course, if you withdraw, the withdrawal will enter into force 12 months after the notification. Now, page 10, which is the implementation plan, on our part, once we have ratified, we'll be strengthened to engage with the Africa Group and other states in the continent, and named as the Non-Allied Movement and other like-minded states to promote the treaty. And we'll also engage state parties states that are opposed to the treaty to seek support and understanding. Now, on page 11, in terms of the implications, organizationally, there won't be implication. We'll do the job with the current resources that we have in the different missions, which is New York, Geneva, and Vienna. And I think the cost will mainly just be limited to follow-up meetings to review the treaty.
report, page 12, Honorable Chair, is the recommendation.
Thank you very much. I'm terribly sorry that you heeded our request and ran ahead of us. Welcome, Honorable Patrick. Can I just say, Honorable Members, what we have before us then, Martin, see if you can get Honorable Patrick, is the document as well as the the written treaty. We all have a copy of the written treaty with its 8 chapters in it, or what do they call it? And then we also have the one letter. Oh yeah, then we have the explanatory memorandum. Normally when we accept the treaty with its explanatory memorandum. And then we have the surety, other than Honorable Mahuevo, who has the legal mind. We have the letter here from the lawyers of the International Relations and Cooperation Department, Tanya Steenkamp-Jeffer, that has signed that indeed it is in line with our Constitution. I therefore put before you, Honorable Members, that the Select Committee on Trade and International Relations, having considered the treaty on the provision of nuclear weapons, recommends that the House, that the NCOP, in terms of Section 231, brackets 2, of the Constitution, approve the said treaty. Honorable High?
Yeah. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I move for the adoption of the treaty.
And support, Honorable High?
Anybody opposed? There wouldn't be opposition. Okay. Let's then, we've accepted it. Let's now hear if the members have any comments, any input that you'd want to make on the treaty. I note the Honorable Faber. Any other hands? There were more women. Okay. Let's have those two hands. I would want to add my piece to that as well. Honorable Faber, please.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, as you know, we are almost not even a role player if you look at us against some of these huge countries. I quickly just look at some of it. The USSR's got on the, as you call it, stockpiled, Russia, 6,815 nuclear bombs. USA, 6,550. France, 300. UK, 120. China, 280. They're talking about nuclear bombs of 100 megatons. That is 3,000 times more than the one in Hiroshima. Now, if we see only the destruction that happened in Hiroshima, think of 3,000 times that one bomb. Now, Chairperson, you know, obviously there must be some type of regulation, and I think, as I say, we are just a drop in the ocean when it comes to helping with these regulations. But surely, is there, will this be able to safeguard actually the world, as the presenter said to us? You know, even one small mishap can almost have detrimental effects on the whole existence of the world. If you read about what they call the Russian bomb that was tested, the Tsar bomb, for instance, and this was only a test, and the mass destruction that this had. Luckily, the radioactivity was not so much because it was detonated in the air, so it could not be on the earth above the sea. But if you go and read in that report, that effect already, that in the whole area. How will we be able, in any way, is it only that we, in good faith, at least, then sign these type of treaties? Because we won't really have any impact on it. What type of can we play to help to have a real impact in world peace to try and get rid of these type of things?
Thank you, Honourable Mahuya. Honourable Father is from Northern Cape. You can understand his concern. They are very big.
True.
I'm just referring to slide number 9 of page 9. The treaty is signed by 69 states and ratified by 19. So it means now, like you said, we need 15 states to ratify it to be possible. So we're sitting at 19 out of 50. And my worry has always been with these treaties, you know, they are signed, but when it comes to the next level of ratification by other states, it becomes a problem in many instances. And I thought I heard you saying, John Elion, that the country has been instrumental, you know, in trying this the treaty to come to life. So what is it that we're doing, or, you know, to make sure that, you know, we get to 50 as a country, you know, their role playing, if any, what is it? Share the details with us. And secondly, what are the challenges? Why these treaties, you know, are simply signed, they never get to ratification by other states? Are there problems that we should know or want to share with us if there are any challenges? Because what's the point of having these treaties? It costs the public, you know, it becomes costing the public fund, you know, to travel and sit and spend days and getting these things tried and fighting for. Also to find out we just never get to the point where we should be to have this instrument legally enforceable. Thank you, Chair.
So those two questions seem to be related there.
Yeah.
Let's have the Honourable Mahwebu is from Eastern Cape. Honourable Kai, who's taking the floor now, is also from Eastern Cape. But it's quite clear when we talk about these things, we are not representing our province narrowly.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. I just wanted to check, you said for the treaty to be operational, we need 60. The likelihood of getting more countries, particularly in Africa, ratifying so that we reach that 60, what is the likelihood? I mean, that 50. And secondly, I mean, U.S. is always blaming the countries like Iran for nuclear tests and also North Korea. Yet they are also culprits. I mean, there are no contradiction there. Yeah. So those are the two clarities I'm seeking.
Thank you very much, Honorable High. Let me just add my two as well. The one is that my understanding is that this is not a new treaty. This is the renewal of a treaty that we have signed before. Am I right in that? That's my first question. My second question is that there are other players as well in this terrain. I know of two people from South Africa. The one is Abdul Minty, and the other one is the late Archbishop Trevor Huddleston, that has been doing magnificent work in terms of getting other countries also to buy into these type of treaties. Can you tell us what are the other players doing at the moment, which relates to the point raised by my colleagues, that it's not a matter only that the states are looking at, but we also have other important influential parties that are equally concerned about the devastation that nuclear, if used irresponsibly, can create for the world. Thank you very much.
Sir, thank you very much. You will know that Ambassador Abdul Minty has retired from public service, and we are planning to engage him from the African Commission on Nuclear Energy as a special envoy to assist us to engage the continent. So he has a role to play. Yeah, last year, the Nobel Prize Committee, after the adoption of the treaty, decided to give the NGO called the International Coalition Against Nuclear Weapons, Nobel Prize. So it was awarded to them for peace, which after the, I mean, of course, they've done a lot of work over the years. They are domiciled in the U.S. as well, but they have been at the forefront of
what is International?
International Coalition Against Nuclear Weapons. So they came here to South Africa in August. We had a workshop with a select number of African states. So they are leading the push for ratification. Now, with the, and then you have the International Committee of the Red Cross, which for Southern Africa is based in Pretoria, its regional office. We work with them as well because their main focus is the respect for international humanitarian law, which is the law of war. And they are concerned, of course, that if you have nuclear weapons, the number of victims you're going to have and so on and so forth. So we work with them. Now, maybe coming back to the question of the ratification, our view, anyway, we didn't even expect Gambia to be the first in the continent. Mm. Our view is that we would have long wanted, but of course our ratification process, there are a lot of consultations we must do. Now, what we have discovered is that for most of the states, particularly states that are observing the common law system, that the ratification process can be a bit tedious and long, as opposed to the civil law system where if the head of state decree that is considered to be a ratification. Now, looking at the states that voted in favor of the treaty as well as who are members of the Pelindaba Treaty, which is 40, we have this safe assumption that once we ratify, it will be easy for us to engage them. We couldn't do the engagement in the past 8 months because the first question they were going to ask was, why are you not ratifying? So we'll be working with the ICANN organization as well as the ICRC as well as other means as well through the Pelindaba Treaty to encourage a good number of African states. We have been told by the Namibians that they are working on the process as well, and I think that will assist. And Nigeria as well was part of the core with us that was at the forefront of the negotiation of the treaty. So we assume that Nigeria as well is just going through the same process with us, all of us using a common law, I mean, system that requires that we go through the processes that we have just gone through. Now, currently, in terms of the other treaties dealing with weapons of mass destruction, the report that we get is that this is unprecedented, that from September, in a space of a year, we have 19. So we're doing well. The expectation is that in a space of 3 years, by 2020, the treaty should come into force. Now, this is a major, even the 20, is a major breakthrough, taking into account that the five biggest states, the superpowers, are against this treaty. We are told that there are some states that are experiencing pressure now not to ratify the treaty. Because what the treaty does in the main, when you come back to that question of what impact is it going to have, we deliberately agreed that we want the treaty to delegitimize nuclear weapons, one. Two, stigmatize it. Because before this treaty, there was no law whatsoever that said nuclear weapons were illegal. And that was a deliberate omission on the part of the superpowers. But something that has happened for the first time since 1945, when the current international liberal order was set and put in place, there has never been a treaty of major consequences that was negotiated without the U.S. or the Western states. Now, for the first time, even the public opinion in their countries is saying you are losing the leadership of the world. The fact that other states, led by South Africa, Brazil, Nigeria, can lead to an adoption of a treaty without you, that says a lot. And it means the tectonic plates have shifted. It means, therefore, you no longer have exclusive monopoly on the international system. So that's what is important. So what is at stake is the treaty coming into force. Because I think they will bank on the treaty not coming into force, which in their view will mean that this was just a mere gimmick. And that's why I think the ratification on our part will go a long way in assisting us to make sure that we lead the process towards the ratification. The contradiction, that's true.
nobody has ever raised an issue about Israel having nuclear weapons. But any time Iran engages even on a peaceful, no matter how they say our nuclear program is for peaceful purposes, but there are always eyebrows that are being raised and so on and so forth. And of course, DPRK argues that the reason why Donald Trump has not attacked them is because they have managed as well to develop nuclear weapons. So they say, look, basically, without nuclear weapons, we would have been attacked by the U.S. Mm. Now that we have developed these nuclear weapons and we have tested, and they know that we do have them, they can't touch us. So this is part of it. But part of the main reason for us to raise this, actually we're asking, is this a new treaty? It is new, because the Non-Proliferation Treaty, which came into force in 1970, what it does was to, it's discriminatory in the sense that it prohibits those of us who don't have nuclear weapons from having nuclear weapons, but recognize the five states that have nuclear weapons. That's why India and Pakistan have not signed and went ahead with their nuclear program. Now, what this will do will help us, because when it comes to the Non-Proliferation Treaty review, their main focus is on us who are using nuclear for peaceful purposes. You know, the Perindava station there is monitored 24 hours in Vienna by IEA, but they still give us visit to come and check. You know the story of the Americans and Obama wanting us to give them back what they claimed fissile materials from the U.S. And of course, the break-in that happened in Perindava in 2007. So those issues are issues of concern, because now they will know when they raise an issue that the issue is not about us who are doing enrichment for peaceful purposes, but the issue is that there's a treaty which, for the first time, they are not excluded from, but they are deliberately not going to ratify. Our chair, I attempted to deal with the questions that were raised.
Thank you very much. Are we okay to?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much to Dirko. Can I just pass two comments? The one is the point that you are making about Ambassador Abdul Munsi, that please keep us informed on that, because we are also with DTI working on the Africa Free Trade Agreement, and we would want to make sure that we use that strength as well in our engagements with other heads of state and government, so that when we particularly look at the manufacturing, we're in the fourth industrial revolution, and we're going to have innovation technology developing. And we may just find there's a country in Africa that may be lobbied to manufacture nuclear arms, lobbied by one of the superpowers. And we need to be vigilant, therefore, and I think, therefore, the Honorable Abdul Munsi would have an important role. I know he has a great passion for that. But also the role that he's been playing with the Archbishop, that we may want to look at another respected world leader. And I know that we have an embassy in Italy. Maybe our embassy in Italy should engage with the Pope. The Pope is coming to Africa in March next year when he comes to Morocco. And we may want to just explore with our ambassador there whether he cannot come at prayers with the Pope. Because the Pope would be one of the people that would proudly support that, being from a developing country as well. That said, honorable members, we appreciate very much that it's such an important, such a powerful piece of an agreement that you brought to us, and we dealt in it almost in the same way that the destruction of this weapons will cause to the world. It will be quick. And we have dealt with it rapidly, but appropriately. Thank you. Thank you very much to you. Honorable members, our meeting is adjourned. Let's just remind ourselves that we're meeting at 11:30 in the same room. we'll continue with the
question.
So, with the competitions amendments. Thank you very much.
Nou moet ik mijn hem zijn.
Ik dacht dat, hè? Hij was echt kouder om te zeggen, voor de pk, ik kan niet.
Hoe kan je niet? Dan kun je hier liggen.
Hij heeft gehad, ja.
Ja, maar als het is, dan is het provincie.
Ja, ik kan niet provincie.
Ik
heb geen
Good service.
You
don't